Now that you've ungarbled it, and that's not what it says, you still think there's a mole? Reed swallowed nervously.
I think...
There was nothing to do but share his suspicions.
I think Longshore got word of a Stasi mole inside of the cabin, and the missing message is his attempt to warn us. He sent it through some other method to make sure that, whoever that mole is, he wouldn't be able to find the warning, realize he'd been discovered, and get away before the rest of us could stop him.
Davis stared at him for a long time, then sighed and nodded his head. That does seem like the most likely scenario at this point, doesn't it?
I don't want to suspect any of the others, said Reed. I don't like this at all.
Then you'd better get used to it. We might already have one traitor, and now they're trying to recruit a second. Davis scowled. But yes, trying to figure out who they've turned and who they hope to turn will be painful.
It says no ID yet, said Reed. Does that mean the Stasi haven't chosen anyone to turn yet, or just that Longshore doesn't know who it is?
Probably the former, said Davis. He calls it a new op, so they might not even have a target. Davis stared at the message and suddenly broke into a grin.
Longshore, you beautiful son of a bitch. He's helping us get out in front of it. He's giving us a heads up now so we can turn the whole thing to our advantage.
Operation Talon, mused Reed.
He thought about the people in the main office just a few feet away through the wall. Which one of them was already a traitor? And which one of them would the Stasi get their claws in next? Davis stared at the paper a moment longer, then set it down and looked Reed squarely in the face. Before we move on this, are you absolutely sure that there's a missing message?
Not absolutely, said Reed, but it makes sense.
Because of the 23 characters he skipped in the book.
Look at the way this one ends. VVV. That standard protocol, padding out the end of a message so it comes to an exact multiple of 25 characters, the fact that he skipped 23 letters is probably one of the clues. A clear indicator that whatever message he did send, he didn't send it on an RT3. So he must have sent it through another channel.
Maybe he put it in a dead drop somewhere, and now he's relying on us to figure out the message he did send, because there's a clue in it. Davis looked up sharply.
A clue? Reed nodded. I realize that this is a lot of supposition, but honestly, look at the message again and tell me there's not a glaring abnormality in the middle of it.
Davis peered at the translated message on his desk, thought for a moment, then tapped one of the words. Ziegel.
Exactly, said Reed.
Stasi code names are one word each, nice and short for ease of use. Harry fits perfectly, but Harry Ziegel flies in the face of everything we know about Stasi protocol.
So either the Stasi have changed their protocol, or Longshore added the word Ziegel as some kind of hidden signal.
Davis scowled at the paper. But to who?
Us, I hope?
Reed shrugged. Possibly to another double agent, if Longshore has turned, but I find that unlikely. It would burn the entire form of communication. If we assume he's talking to us, but in secret, then he's telling us where the missing message is. Ziegel means brick in German, but that doesn't tell us anything by itself. I assume he didn't hide the missing message in a brick somewhere, just expect us to know which one. Or maybe he did. Maybe the analysts can connect this to something that you and I don't know.
Maybe, said Davis and hesitated. If we trust them.
And that, Reed knew, was the whole problem. Someone in the cabin was likely a double agent, and yet they needed the help of everyone in the cabin if they were going to track down and stop that double agent. And if they didn't stop him, or her. Reed shuddered to think what a GDR operative could do if left unchecked in a CIA office.
Raising a wall in the middle of the night was just the beginning. How long before they swarmed across that wall and claimed more territory? How long before another midnight operation saw Grenzers marching through West Berlin in a full-scale invasion? It would be a violation of the Potsdam Agreement, the agreement that had carved up Berlin in the first place. But would that really stop them? The wall itself was already a violation, more or less. The GDR was starting to gather more troops along the border, not a guarantee of an invasion, but a possibility, difficult to ignore. If they started to restrict that border as well, blocking out government officials instead of just civilians, then it would become very difficult to draw any conclusion other than invasion, and a double agent inside of the cabin, or heaven forbid, two double agents, could only serve to make an invasion easier. How many CIA secrets passed through here in a day, in an hour? How many BND plans did the people in this office know about? Worse yet, how many Stasi secrets could a person in this office bury if they wanted to? For all Reed knew, the invasion plans were already underway, and one of their agents had sent a warning. But a traitor in the very next room had made that warning disappear. Reed thought about the ghost stations, hollow and dark, and imagined the whole city under the same heartless control. It made him feel sick to his stomach. 23 characters, said Davis, and looked at the wall as if he could see right through it to the officers beyond. Whose name fits?
Harald Wagner, MFS agent, said Reed, counting in his head. That's 20. Harald Wagner is a MFS agent. Is a perfect 23.
You think it's Harald?
I have no idea, said Reed. He's just the one I know the least.
This is dangerous territory, warned Davis, but then paused.
Yannick's name is longer, and Johannes's, Johannes Ostertaghas.
Reed counted in his head faster than the chief could. 16 letters. Yannick Wohlreich has the same.
Wallace Reed has 11, Davis warned.
Reed shot him a wary glance, but continued.
Yannick Wohlreich, MFS, not agent. That's one letter too long. Mole?
Gordon Davis, a double agent, said Davis.
A perfect 23. I suppose we could sit here all day and find 100 incriminating sentences for every person in this office, but that's only going to sow paranoia.
I shouldn't even have brought it up. We need,
he shook his head,
we need to be able to trust our people, is what we need.
What if we bring in the analysts, said Reed, but we only give them a portion of the message?
Not enough to cause damage, but something they can help shed some light on.
What portion? How about Siegel?
Davis laughed, but there was no humor in it.
And if Siegel is the one word a traitorous longshore is trying to pass to a Stasi contact? An activation code for an operation, maybe? What then?
We could, Reed frowned. We could have the surveillance specialists follow the analysts after to see what they do. But then the surveillance team will know that something is going on, and any trust our officers have for each other will start to crumble, and
who knows where such a thing will ever end, said Davis, nodding.
That's the great conundrum, isn't it? Do we trust each other and possibly enable a double agent to destroy our office, or do we stop trusting each other and destroy the office on our own?
He drummed his fingers on the desk, reading the message again. After a moment, he pulled out a fresh piece of paper and started copying down a portion of the message they were now thinking of as Message 42.
Get Kohler and DeMillen here. We'll show them Siegel and see what happens. Which means we have to watch what happens. We'll function as ad hoc surveillance specialists and observe them ourselves.
Which one?
Reed blinked.
Excuse me?
Which one do you want to follow? Asked Davis. Kohler or DeMille?
I'm not trained in...
You're a spy, said Davis. It's not all desk work. Either they do their jobs or they try to contact a Stasi handler. Either way, we learn something. But only if we're paying attention. I almost hope one of them does contact the Stasi because that would make our mole hunt so much easier.
You don't really want that, said Reed.
Davis sighed. No, I don't. But I don't see what other option we have.
Reed hesitated. I'll watch Lisa Kohler.
Fair enough, said Davis. I'll take Chuck. Bring them in. Reed nodded and unlocked the door.
Bettina?
The secretary looked up.
Yes?
Could you get Lisa and Chuck in here, please?
Of course, Mr. Reed.
She stood to go and get them, and Reed turned back to the office. Davis finished copying the first line of the message, the letters neat and crisp, and then folded Reed's original and put it in the breast pocket of his jacket.
Hi,
said Chuck DeMille as he entered the room. He carried a pad and a pencil, and Lisa was close behind him with the same.
What's up? Ostertag owes you $10,
said Reed.
Werner Probst was a Stasi agent.
Chuck grinned.
Where's my bookie when I need him? The old DeMille knows, strikes again.
Knows? Asked Reed.
I can pick a winning horse like nobody's business, said Chuck, sitting down. I've always been an analyst. Wally, it just hasn't always been for King and Country.
Lisa looked at Reed and then at Davis.
Is this about the Longshore message?
It is, said Davis. Have a seat. Mr. Reed, can you close the door, please? Reed closed the door and twisted the bolt to lock it. Lisa looked at him again just for a moment, then sat down next to Chuck. There were no chairs left, so Reed leaned against the wall behind them. Davis held up the paper. The message we received today was not number 41, it was 42. 41 has gone missing.
How do you know? Asked Chuck.
We don't, said Davis. But we have good cause to believe it. We also believe that Longshore did this on purpose. We will proceed for now on the assumption that he's hidden message 41 somewhere in the city. He slid the paper toward them across the desk. Message 42, I suspect, can tell us where. Chuck took the paper and read it out loud.
WPMFS Agent CN Harry Ziegel, huh?
He handed the paper to Lisa.
What's Ziegel? It's clearly not part of the code name.
That's the mystery, said Davis. What do you make of it?
Ziegel is the German word for brick, said Lisa. But I assume it's not as simple as I hid the message in a brick.
Depends on the brick, said Chuck.
No, said Reed, the German matters. He's not talking about a brick, he's talking about Ziegel. That word, specifically. Chuck looked at him.
What makes you say that?
Reed smiled slightly. He wasn't an analyst, but he knew cryptography better than anyone in the room.
Because Ziegel is 6 letters and brick is only 5. Space is at a premium in these messages. Longshore never uses extra letters unless he has to. What is the rest of the message? Asked Lisa. The RT3 sends messages in 25 character segments, and this doesn't add up.
Reed said nothing, and Davis stared at her, probably deciding how to answer. He took long enough that she spoke again.
Usually you give us the entire message.
This one had something we're not fully ready to share yet, said Davis. Focus on Ziegel for now. Figure out everything Longshore might possibly be referring to, and find that message.
Chuck shook his head.
Chief, even if he did hide a message somewhere, he had to have hidden it on the other side of the wall. He can't get over here. That's the whole problem.
Government officers are allowed to cross at will, said Davis, as part of the Potsdam Agreement. Wall or no wall, we're still allegedly partners overseeing the reconstruction of the city. Civilians aren't allowed to cross, but If you can find that message, I can go and get it.
If they let you, thought Reed. If this isn't the start of a military invasion.
p.m. West Berlin. Reed worked late, combing through message 42 for anything else he could find. Were there other meanings hidden in the words, in the numbers? Translated back into numbers again, did the word Ziegel add up to anything? An address, or a time, or a coordinate? Did it matter that Ziegel was the sixth word, or that MFS was both the second and the seventh? It was just like his earlier attempts to decrypt the radio transmission, purely meaningless, until suddenly it would all make perfect sense. Except this time, it never made sense. He finally retired for the night at 7:30. Nearly the last person in the building, he locked up his work in the safe by his desk, put on his jacket, and walked to the train station. The mid-October air was chilly and he turned up his collar at the wind. Reed caught the 807 train to Gesundbrunnen and rode it in silence, gripping the pole tightly through the ghost stations. The only light was the faint illumination from inside the train itself, and it barely reached more than a few feet into the darkness. He got off at Folterstrasse, walked the half block to his building, and fumbled for his key. He headed up the narrow stairs to his apartment and opened the door. He heard a noise in the back room. He froze and listened. A footstep, and then a scraping sound. Wood on wood, a drawer. Someone was going through his things. Reed still had his gun under his jacket. Had the intruder heard him? He stood in the doorway, locked in indecision. Attack or run, fight or flight. He heard another footstep from what had to be his bedroom. He didn't keep anything secret in there, but the intruder wouldn't know that. Was it a burglar? A GDR assassin? A Stasi asset handler come to recruit him into Operation Talon? Another footstep, and a small thunk as something was moved or set down. Whoever was back there didn't know Reed was home yet. He pulled out his gun and stepped into the apartment. Reed's eyes scanned the front, a small living room and kitchen. It didn't look like anything had been dumped out or knocked over. He had a TV here and a radio and a collection of books, which, while not heirlooms, were at least somewhat valuable. The intruder had gone past them all. Reed stepped over the squeaky spot in the floor, keeping his gun pointed down the hallway toward his bedroom, and glanced at the air vent in the wall behind the living room chair. It hadn't been touched. Whoever was here didn't know about his cache of CIA documents, or at least didn't know where it was hidden. Is that what they were searching for in his room? He took another step to the side, glancing into the kitchen. It was empty and untouched, except for a kettle warming on the stove. Had the intruder made himself some tea? Reed tightened his grip on the gun, holding it in front of him carefully, and walked into the hallway. There were four doors, a closet, a bathroom, and two bedrooms, one that Reed slept in and one that he used as an office. The closet door was closed. The bathroom and the office were open but dark. If the intruder had searched them, he had already finished and moved on. The bedroom door was ajar and a dim light spilled out into the hallway, not the bright light from the fixture in the ceiling, but not the moving beam of a flashlight either. The bedside lamp, Reed guessed. He held his breath and stepped closer, placing his feet carefully to avoid the creak in the wooden floor. A shadow passed in front of the gap, plunging the hallway into a split second of darkness. Reed paused, training his gun on the door, waiting to see if the intruder came bursting out. He heard more footsteps. Nothing happened. He took a step forward, then another. The intruder, whoever it was inside the room and to the right. Reed needed to step in, spin around the door, and aim all in a single motion. He put his foot in front of the door,
ready to kick it open and steeled his nerves. One. Two. Three.
Reed shoved the door open and burst into the room, spinning toward the right to draw a bead on the intruder. He was met with a blur of motion, a glimpse of brown hair and black clothes and bare skin, and then a hand grabbed his wrist and twisted it to the side, wrenching the bones just enough to spasm the muscles in his hand, sending the gun flying into the wall. He stepped back, prepping himself for another blow, and the attacker stepped forward. And then he recognized her.
Lisa!
Lisa Cola stood by the bed wearing a black silk slip and crouching in a combat stance. She seemed to have recognized him in the same moment, though while Reed was confused, she looked angry.
Wallace! Lisa, what are you? I could have killed you, Wally! Why did you have a gun?
I always have a gun. Lisa, it's our job. I thought you were a burglar.
She widened her eyes.
I am your girlfriend, Dummkopf. Why are you here on a Thursday? You never come on Thursdays. We have a schedule. That's how we hide this whole thing from the rest of the cabin. Shh,
she said, putting her finger in front of her lips. She walked toward him.
I missed you. We'll be fine.
Reed's heart was still pounding.
I almost shot you, Lisa.
She smirked at that.
I worked in the field for 6 years. Wally, you didn't come close to shooting me.
I'm sorry, said Reed and walked to the bed. He put his hand on his head, feeling the adrenaline still coursing through him, and then sat on the edge of the mattress. It's been a day, you know. A really long, hard, paranoid day. I heard footsteps and I thought maybe you were a burglar or a Stasi agent or something. We spent the whole day hunting an enemy spy, and then I come home and hear footsteps in the darkness and...
Lisa stepped toward him again, but this time she stepped closer, sliding one bare leg between his. Her silk slip came barely to the middle of her thigh. She put a hand in his face.
Not everything that happens in the dark is dangerous.
Reed laughed and put a hand on her waist. He could feel nothing under the silk but her body.
If they find out we're seeing each other, it's going to become dangerous. Quickly.
I was very good at the office,
she said, and bent and kissed him slowly on the side of his forehead. She whispered,
I wanted to do that all day, but no one could tell a thing.
Reed raised his hand to her cheek, turning her head and lining up her lips with his. He breathed deeply, filling his lungs with her breath, feeling the hollow space between their parted lips, and then kissed her. Gently at first, light and probing, and then deep and hungry. She broke contact and whispered in his ear,
You close the door.
I left it open.
Close it,
she said, and took a step backward and slid one of the straps off her shoulder.
Then come back here, and we can do something productive with all this adrenaline.
Half an hour later, spent and cheerful, they lay in bed together, staring at the ceiling. The light from the bedside lamp didn't quite reach all the way to the corners, and Reed imagined it as a full sphere of illumination sliced into an imperfect cube by the borders of the room. He wondered if there was anything useful behind the mathematics that calculating such a shape would require, and was startled when Lisa laughed. He looked at her and found that she was watching him, the corners of her eyes wrinkled with delight.
What?
He asked.
You have cryptographer face again.
Is that bad?
It's why I'm here, so you decide. I think it's adorable.
Reed watched the light as it reflected on her cheeks and nose, and then chuckled softly and lay back down, staring up at the ceiling again. Further proof that math has given me everything I truly enjoy in life. Such a little professor, she said, and snuggled closer to him, pulling the thin blanket up over her shoulders. The day had been warm, but the nights were already growing cold enough to bite.
What do you want to do when all of this is over? I think you would be good as a professor.
All of what is over? He asked. The wall? The Soviet Union as an entity? I don't know if that's ever going to end.
Everything ends. It is very American to think that the way a nation exists today is the only way it will ever exist. Your nation has only ever been one thing.
Reed frowned. We were an occupied colony before we were a nation.
Exactly.
And now that you're a nation, you think you're perfect.
I have read your history books. America is not just a phase in your development, but the grand culmination of it.
Reed glanced at her. And you think that's naive?
I think it's very adolescent. And adolescents hate to be critiqued, so I won't say anything else about it.
Reed laughed. That's cheating. You can't just say something like that and then refuse to explain yourself.
I don't have to explain anything, she said, and kissed him on the cheek. I'm mysterious.
She yanked the blanket away from him, wrapped it around herself, then padded across the floor to the hallway and into the bathroom. Reed pulled the bedsheet tighter around himself, found that it did very little to warm his chest, and leaned across the empty space to grab a sweater from the back of a nearby chair. He pulled it on and stared at the open bedroom door. He had told Chief Davis he would observe Lisa Kohler, to see how she reacted to the snippet of Longshore's message, to see if she did anything suspicious. This was definitely not what Davis had in mind, but what else could Reed have done? If he'd offered to watch Chuck instead, then Davis would be watching Lisa, and it wouldn't take him long to discover their secret relationship. So Reed had to watch her. Could he do such a thing unbiased? On the one hand, they'd been in this secret relationship for a couple of months now, and he'd gotten to know her, he thought, fairly well. He'd never seen anything to make him suspect her as a Stasi agent. On the other hand, she'd been a field agent for years before joining the cabin. If she wanted to make someone trust her, she knew exactly how to do it. He could drive himself crazy trying to second-guess her and himself in an endless paranoid spiral, but it wouldn't do anyone any good. Better to simply observe without prejudging and take things calmly. Reed looked around the room and picked up his book from the nightstand, The Military Cipher of Commandant Bazeres. He read it once in college, but he knew so much more of the theory now and had decided to read it again with a new perspective.
You're lucky, Lisa called from the other room. You have a good position in the cabin, and you have the ear of Chief Davis. You will get a good promotion from that.
Reed smiled again, half bothered and half amused by her choice of word.
And that's because I'm lucky? Here I thought I was good at my job.
Very good, she said, coming back into the bedroom.
She threw the blanket over his head and laughed while he struggled to pull himself clear of it. When he did, he saw she was wearing another of his sweaters, and she climbed back into bed.
But you were the one who decoded the transitional message from Longshore, the one where he established his new encryption system. Now, by necessity, you get invited to all the important meetings. We are all good at our jobs, but the chief sees you being good at your job much more than he sees us.
Reed pursed his lips, thinking.
I suppose.
I'm an analyst, said Lisa, and pulled out a book of her own. Trust me when I analyze something.
I'm not entirely certain that I want a promotion, said Reed.
Since we're talking about Davis, he's a good example. I wouldn't want his job. He spends all day managing papers and coordinating operations, and I'd rather spend my time doing this. He held up the book. Cryptography. Code breaking. This is what I love.
Nobody stays in the same place forever, said Lisa. Don't you think about the future?
We live in the gap between two superpowers, said Reed. The future is all I think about.
I mean your future, she said.
I used to work in the field, and today I'm in the office, and tomorrow I will be doing this. She mimicked his gesture, holding up her book, a solid blue cover with the single word Fortran in large white letters. Someday we might not even need human cryptographers anymore because computers will do everything.
Never, said Reed.
Said the horseman to the automobile.
Computers speak in code, said Reed.
If anything, cryptography will get more useful, not less.
It's not a code, but a language, she said.
You might as well call German a code or French. In the former case, you might be right. Reed laughed when she smacked him playfully on the thigh.
My German is good.
Aber die Sprache ist sehr komplex. German is not that complex.
Neither is binary, said Reed with a grin. But you seem fairly proud of yourself for learning it.
First, said Lisa, looking at him seriously, every German 2-year-old can speak German, so it cannot be that much of an achievement to learn it. And your accent is perfect. So what are you complaining about? Second, Fortran is a language that lets you program a computer without knowing binary.
That seems like it would take all the fun out of it.
Some of us do not get to have fun all day, said Lisa with a smirk and opened her book. Some of us have to work for a living.
Reed laughed again, calling the banter a draw, and looked back at his own book, but found that he couldn't focus on it. His mind was too full of binary.
Programmers call binary machine code, he said, closing his book again and looking at Lisa.
It's useful for computers because it's very simple for their circuits to process, but for untrained humans, it's incredibly difficult to understand, which means that we might be able to use it as an actual code.
Lisa cast him a long glance from the side of her eye, then peered in closer, pretending to study him carefully. She nodded.
Definitely cryptographer face, she said. Worst case I have ever seen.
We've been looking for a code we can use between us, said Reed, growing more excited. Something to pass messages that no one else would know our messages? What if we used binary? But not with actual ones and zeros, because that would be too obvious. Ostertag would recognize that in a heartbeat. All you really need is two states, on and off, empty and full. What if I had to send you a message at work, but all I had was a row of coffee cups? Coffee cups, some of them empty and some of them full. In an A1 cipher, one full cup by itself would be A, and a full cup with an empty would be B, and no, this isn't going to work because you'd need up to 5 characters per letter to do the whole alphabet. I'd have to cover my entire desk with coffee cups. Goodness, I thought I had seen cryptographer face before, but this is a whole new level.
1100, said Reed, and looked at her with a smile.
That's you. That's the letter L.
Okay, said Lisa, setting down her book. And Wally starts with W, which is the number 23, which in binary would be...
Reed waited while she figured it out.
10111.
She laughed. That is a lot of full coffee cups.
Maybe we could tap it out like Morse. A dot for zero, a dash for one, and an empty space between letters. We could send an entire message that looks like Morse but isn't.
Do you think that Longshaw did that with his missing message? Asked Lisa.
Reed blinked. No.
The question confused him, not just because it didn't seem plausible, but because he and Lisa had agreed not to talk about the specifics of their work outside of the office. Office politics was fair game, but secret information was, well, secret. And the details of Longshore's messages were definitely secret. Dating another officer was already against the rules. Sharing secrets with one was far worse.
Why would you ask that?
You just seem very excited about it, said Lisa.
It's a way to send Morse messages without sending Morse messages, said Reed. How is that not exciting?
It's just not very practical, said Lisa.
If I tried to tap even something as short as your name in binary Morse, the entire cabin would know I was up to something.
Then we find some other. Reed paused, then brightened suddenly.
Calendars.
A monthly calendar is a 5x7 grid. If each column is a 5-letter sequence denoting a single letter, you could write a whole 7-letter word on a calendar page just by putting a little mark on some of the days and not others, and no one would ever suspect a thing.
Lisa stared at him, her eyes wide, and then laughed out loud.
You are adorable.
She gave him another kiss on the cheek.
A cryptographer to the bone.
She looked back at her book, and Reed opened his, but instead of reading, he simply watched her. He hadn't said it out loud, and he didn't dare to, not yet, at least, but this was what he really wanted from the future. With or without the wall, with or without the cabin, even with or without cryptography. He wanted her. He wanted to have this easy rapport, this depth of understanding, this love. He'd never told her that he loved her. Did she know? She had to know. She was the analyst, after all, and interpreting unspoken truths was her entire area of expertise. And yet she'd never said anything about it. Maybe she was waiting for him. Maybe it was his job to say it first. Maybe it never occurred to her either way. Their relationship was definitely going to make spying on her more difficult. But there was no way out of it now. He looked at his book and tried to read. Friday, October 20th, 1961, 5:33 a.m., West Berlin. The phone woke Reed with a strident ring. He fumbled for it in the cold darkness and almost hit himself with the receiver when he picked it up.
Hello.
Good morning, said a woman's voice. Do you have any bread today?
What?
Bread, the woman repeated. Do you have any bread today? Reed's brain finally clicked and his eyes shot open. Bettina, with a message from the cabin.
Yes, yes, I have bread today. Do you need it this morning?
If you please.
Of course. I'll put it on your account.
Reed hung up the phone and clicked on the light to look for clothes. Lisa stirred.
Brad.
Sorry, he said and clicked off the light. This is an unscrambled line, so we use a code when the cabin calls me. I assume they do the same with you. She squinted at the window, then closed her eyes and squirmed deeper into the covers.
It's too early. There's no way it takes you this long to get ready.
They need me now, said Reed, gathering a full change of clothes as he shivered in the cold. That probably means we just got a message from Longshore.
Lisa bolted upright in bed. Do they need me?
Damn, said Reed, freezing in place halfway to the door. I hadn't thought of that.
Don't cover for me, said Lisa, scrambling for her clothing. If they've already called my flat, they'll know I wasn't home. If they think you know anything about where I've been, they'll be suspicious. If they ask, I'll tell them I spent the night with someone. They don't need to know who.
Just some guy? Lisa glared at him.
Are you jealous of my cover story?
I mean, what about your reputation?
You are such an ass, said Lisa and pulled on her skirt.
Reed started to protest, but she cut him off with a glance.
You shower. I have to go home anyway for clothes, so I can shower there. If they call me at all, it will probably be after you translate the message, so I will have time.
Reed watched her, trying to think.
Go, she said.
He turned and hurried into the shower. 10 minutes later, he was running through the street to Fultestrasse station, and 10 minutes after that, he was clutching the train's cold bars, rocking gently back and forth as they rumbled through the ghost stations. He thought once that he saw movement beyond the windows, but it was only a trick of the darkness.
Guten Morgen,
said the guard of the cabin's elevator. Reed showed him his ID and opened the door to the office.
Morgen,
said Bettina. The main room was empty.
Thank you for coming in early. The message is in the recorder.
Thank you, said Reed, and walked past her into Davis's office. How early did he arrive in the mornings?
New Longshore message, said Reed.
What's the confirmation code?
Davis looked up.
B.
Bring it to me as soon as you've finished. It isn't off when we get two of them back to back, so I'm assuming it's important.
Reed rubbed his eyes.
Yeah, I gathered that when Betty called me at 5:30 in the morning.
Be quick, said Davis, and Reed nodded.
The rest of the ritual was the same as always. He retrieved the tape from the recorder, threaded in a new one, took the tape and a clean pad of paper into the code room, and carefully locked the door. He laid out his materials, readied his pistol, and unlocked the safe to retrieve the book and his previous notes. Player piano. He stared at it, wondering what it was really about. He'd skimmed through the first few pages, finding a story about a man in a factory complex and something about a dead cat. It didn't make much sense to him, but he didn't have time to read the whole thing in here and didn't dare to read it all on the outside. If anyone connected him to the book and made the leap of logic, well, it would be a ridiculous leap of logic, but it was safer to avoid it. Someday when he retired, like Lisa had talked about last night, then he would read it. For now, he had decryption to do. He listened to the tape on normal speed, finding 6 bursts of Morse, 6 cylinders on an RT3 burst encoder. The new section of letters for message 43, assuming there wasn't another missing message, should pick up right where 42 had left off, in the middle of the word intercom. The first number of the message was 20, and the first letter in the book was R, the 18th letter. 20 minus 18 was 2, which was B. So the confirmation code was correct. Reed smiled. Another normal message. Yet 10 minutes later, he was back in Davis's office shaking his head.
It's not a normal message, Reed said, and handed Davis the translation.
B.
Siganov says in meeting in Rennstall Talon, Opsi and Baker not chosen. B B B B B B B B B B B B B B B B B B.
Davis frowned as he read it.
Part of it makes sense, said Reed. Operation Talon is being led by someone named Siganov, who's chosen a code name for the potential double agent but still hasn't chosen the actual agent yet. They don't know which one of us they're going to be able to recruit. That matches what we guessed yesterday. Also, Longshore apparently gained this information from a meeting in a racing stable. That's what Rennstall means. Beyond that, he shrugged.
It's very strange.
Davis counted with his finger. 18 Bs, he murmured. That's most of a cylinder. It's a cylinder and a half, said Reed. I thought a cylinder had 25 letters.
This is getting into the nitty-gritty details of how an RT-3 burst encoder works, said Reed.
It has 25 slots, yes, but each slot is only capable of producing 10 different characters, B, F, G, K, L, M, R, V, W, and 5. Those were chosen because they're all about the same length in Morse, and they're easy to tell apart. I suppose they could have made the encoder capable of producing the entire alphabet, but it would have been massive. Limiting it like this makes it portable, so our agents can actually carry the thing around and hide it more effectively. Davis frowned. I remember reading about this. Now that you mention it, the agent uses combinations of those characters to produce all the others.
Exactly, said Reed.
Every letter and number is produced by a two-character combination of those basic 10. So this message has 75 characters, but it took 150 characters to send it. 6 cylinders, and those 18 Bs took 36 characters to send. That's not a full cylinder and a half, but it's close.
Davis frowned again.
The confirmation code at the beginning is to let us know the message is real, but the letters at the end are only there to fill out the cylinder. Why send an entire cylinder of placeholders?
The cylinders hold 25 characters each, said Reed. So our two-letter code doesn't fit into it perfectly.
The final character on any odd-numbered cylinder wouldn't actually mean anything without the first character on the next cylinder to finish it off.
Surely he thinks we're smart enough to figure out that the message was over, said Davis.
He stared at the message a moment, then spoke without looking up. Has this ever happened before? A message that should only require an odd number of cylinders?
Never, said Reed. I think he deliberately builds them around the constraints of the device. An odd number of cylinders would leave an ambiguous ending, so he adds extra information or abbreviates words to keep the cylinders even.
And then this time he didn't. Reed nodded.
If you ignore the 18 Bs at the end, the message is only 57 characters long, and it's oddly wordy at that. It seems like he could have easily cut this by enough characters to fit it on 4 cylinders instead of 6. He gestured at the message, and without 18 Bs.
Davis stared at the message, one hand on his mouth and the other hand tapping on his desk. Why did he spell out meeting like that all the way? Why not MTG?
And why bother telling us where the meeting happened at all? Asked Reed.
Davis started counting again. Abbreviating meeting to MTG would save 4 characters. 8 in the two-character system. And he'd have saved even more if he'd shuffled the words a bit. Rennstahl MTG, Tsiganov says, etc. The way he has it now feels almost like he's trying to pad it out. It says the word in twice. Tsiganov says in meeting in Rennstahl. But he doesn't really need either of them.
Obviously we're missing something, said Reed. Every cylinder he broadcasts increases the chance that the Stasi will trace his signal and find him. Why pad this out, and why pad it out so poorly? If he's sending a message anyway, why not fill that extra space with more information?
There is one obvious possibility, said Davis and looked up at Reed. Assuming we're right about the missing message, this could be another clue about where to find it.
He looked at the door and raised his voice. Bettina! Is Chuck in yet?
Not yet, sir. It's still early.
Reed glanced at the clock over Chuck's desk. It was barely 7 o'clock.
Tell me when he gets in, said Davis. And he frowned again at the message. Yes. Can you call Miss Kohler as well?
Yes, sir,
said Bettina.
Reed watched Davis waiting. After a moment, the chief sighed and gestured to the door.
Can you lock that?
Reed glanced at him, unsure of what was going to happen next, but closed and locked the door.
Did you watch Lisa Kohler last night?
Reed tried to keep his face neutral.
I did. I'm not sure what her normal evening routine is, but this... Nothing struck me as particularly suspicious.
Davis nodded. I saw the same with Chuck DeMille. We'll keep watching, but...
He sighed. Have a seat.
I'm going to bring you in on something. I'm starting a new operation to counter the Stasi's Operation Talon. Right now, you're the only other one who knows about Talon. So welcome to the team.
You're going to fight Talon?
I'm going to feed Talon, said Davis. Yesterday, we thought we might be able to get ahead of it. Then I started thinking about how. I'm sure they're going through all of our resumes, looking for weak points, trying to find which of us they could blackmail or more likely tempt. So I've done the same, and I found the perfect target. Reed's eyes widened.
You know who they're going to target, Wally?
They don't even know who they're going to target. He waved message 43 in the air. Longshore just confirmed it, so as long as they're still looking, I'm going to dangle the juiciest worm I can find right in front of their faces. I'm going to help them recruit one of us. I'm going to feed them a triple agent.
Reed nodded. So they'll think they've turned one of our officers, but really, he'll still be reporting to us. He smiled. You're going to infiltrate the Stasi agents on this side of the wall. We'll be able to figure out who the other mole is.
Exactly. Reed laughed, but it caught in his throat as a sudden realization hit him.
Wait. You don't mean me. I can't do that. I'm not trained for field work or asset handling or anything like...
No, said Davis, dismissing the idea with a wave. Absolutely no. You'd be terrible as a triple agent.
Thank you.
I need you here, helping me work it from the inside. The actual agent is going to be Frank.
This shocked Reed even more. Frank? You don't think Frank would turn traitor?
I think any of us would turn traitor with the right incentive, said Davis. But no, I don't doubt Frank's loyalty. If we already have a mole, I'm fairly certain it's not Frank, certain enough to bring him in on this. But yes, I do think I can make the Stasi doubt his loyalty and push him into their confidence.
Because he's, Reed tried to think. He's not a socialist. I don't think he's even a liberal. He's a patriot.
Everyone here is a patriot, said Davis. Everyone in the cabin knows, without exception or doubt, that they're on the right side of this war. They fight for their ideals, and the only way to turn one of them is to convince them there's a higher ideal, something huge and important, something personal and simultaneously universal, something that is somehow in conflict with their work here. Reed saw immediately what Davis was getting at, and the implications turned his stomach.
And Franklin Schwartz is a Jewish man being forced to work with Nazis.
Davis nodded. We have two former Nazis in the cabin, and none of us likes working with them. But it's hit Frank worst of all, and with good reason. If the Stasi found a way to, let's see, a friendly bump, I'd guess, say, in the corridor of his apartment building or out on the street in front of it. Someone has just moved in, maybe a single girl, new in the neighborhood and looking for a friend. A few weeks of building trust, never even talking about work, much less admitting she's part of the Stasi, and slowly hooking him deeper and deeper.
You had a bad day. Tell me all about it. Still forcing you to work with those damn Nazis? I hate them too. Hey, you should come to my anti-Nazi group. We meet every Thursday night because something has to be done.
That could work, admitted Reed.
That's the kind of thing that will be put into place after they identify Frank as a potential target, as their Agent Baker. Our job now, yours and mine and Frank's, will be to help them to make this identification without ever seeming like we're the ones pushing it. It has to be completely natural.
Davis flashed a grim smile. Some Soviet prick named Tsiganov wants one of my men as a double agent. I'm going to give him a double agent.
Bettina knocked on the door.
Mr. DeMille is here, sir, and Lisa says she can be here in 15 minutes.
Thank you, said Davis.
Send them both in when Miss Kohler arrives.
Reed pointed at the message on Davis's desk.
Do you want me to recopy that, sir?
Why?
Yesterday you only showed them the first half of message 42 and cut out the part that talked about Operation Talon. I assumed we'd be doing the same today.
Analysts are only as good as their information, said Davis. We need them to find a clue, and while it probably has something to do with the meeting in the stable, it might just as easily be buried in those 18 Bs. Both parts of the message are equally cryptic. They'll need the whole message if they're going to understand it, but we will continue to watch them as closely as possible.
Reed felt a pang of guilt. After a moment, he recovered his composure and nodded.
When should we talk to Frank?
This afternoon, I think, said Davis. I need some time to prepare.
Sounds good. Reed excused himself and wandered through the main office on the way to the restroom. Most of the officers were already there. Chuck and Frank were talking in low voices, and Gisela was thumbing through a thick stack of reports.
Ostertag was sitting in the window watching the yoga girl and smoking. He caught Reed's eye and grinned.
Good morning, Wallace.
Good morning, Johannes.
I looked this one up in the library, said Ostertag, pointing out the window with a cigarette.
They have a book about yoga poses. This one is called Adho Mukha Svanasana, Downward Facing Dog.
Reed walked over and looked, only to see the girl in the park, maybe 20, 21 years old, bent over on her hands and toes, with her rump stuck high in the air. He rolled his eyes and walked away, headed for the restroom.
Ostertag laughed and called after him.
Come on, Wallace, it's my favorite one!
15 minutes later, almost to the second, Lisa walked into the office, looking showered and dressed and nothing at all like she'd spent the night away from home. Bettina gathered them up, Reed, Chuck, and Lisa, and brought them to Davis's office. Once again, Reed gave the analysts the chairs and leaned against the locked door.
Good morning, said Davis.
Morgan, said Lisa. Bettina said you had something important.
Another longshore message, said Davis, and slid the paper with message 43 across his desk.
Chuck peered at it.
Interesting.
He pursed his lips, read it a second time, then spoke without raising his head.
What's Talon?
A Stasi operation, said Davis. Ignore it for now and tell me what you think of the message itself.
Chuck shrugged, still studying the message. Reed saw him counting with his finger before speaking again.
18 Bs.
5 Bs would have sufficed to fill space on the cylinder, said Davis. 5.5, technically. Why send the rest?
Reed watched Lisa, waiting for her to speak, but all she did was stare at the message.
Maybe he's just trying to be clear, said Chuck. If he truncated the message at 5.5 Bs, would we be sitting here having the same word conversation about why we only got a half a letter?
Was he trying to send something else? Was he killed before completing it?
Chuck shrugged, leaning back in his chair.
Or maybe we're reading too much into it.
Maybe, said Davis. He nodded toward the paper. What do you think about the rest of it?
Lisa was still silent.
Chuck leaned forward again, this time picking up the paper.
They met in a racing stable. Does that mean Tsiganov races horses? Is it a specific stable we're supposed to know about? I've been to most of the local ones back before the wall went up, but none of them really stands out as a likely place for a secret meeting.
Miss Kohler, said Davis, do you have any thoughts?
Lisa looked up like she'd been shaken from a reverie.
Sorry.
Davis's expression changed so slightly Reed wasn't sure what to make of it. I asked about your thoughts on the message.
Sorry, said Lisa again. I am still waking up.
She took the message from Chuck's hand.
I can't help but wonder if the bees are there too.
She hesitated.
To get our attention.
What do you mean?
Asked Chuck.
We thought Longshaw might be trying to send a message that only one specific person would see, said Lisa. But now he sends another message so strange, crying out so loudly to be analyzed and studied and pored over, and it's almost like...
She laid the paper on the desk and smoothed it with her hands.
Like he wants as many of us to see it as possible.
Davis leaned forward, looking at the message.
Why do you think he might do that?
Lisa shook her head.
I don't have any idea.
10:15 a.m., West Berlin.
Thanks for coming in, Mr. Schwartz, said Davis. Have a seat. Wallace, would you close the door, please?
Frank smiled, cheerful but obviously uncertain about why he'd been called in for a meeting with the chief.
Sure thing.
Who do you want me to watch this time?
Frank was a surveillance specialist, one of the best Reed had ever worked with. He could find ways to watch someone so arcane and yet so effective that the targets gave up more information about themselves than they ever imagined was possible.
This isn't really about that, said Reed.
He locked the door and sat in the chair next to Frank's.
How are the scores today?
Frank raised his eyebrow. You locked the door so we can talk about baseball?
No, said Reed, shaking his head.
He pointed at Davis, head down over some paperwork.
I'm just waiting for the chief, and I'm terrible at small talk.
Frank looked at Davis, then back at Reed and furrowed his brow.
Spooky. Am I being killed?
He pointed back and forth between the two men.
Are you guys going to kill me?
What? Asked Reed. No, of course we're not.
Relax, said Frank. I'm obviously just yanking your chain.
A locked door meeting with a section chief in a Cold War spy bunker? I gotta cut the tension somehow.
Davis finally looked up.
What we're about to talk about is in strictest confidence. You're under special orders not to share this with anyone outside this room. Frank's face grew more serious.
Of course, sir.
You can trust me completely.
We know, said Davis.
That's why you're here, Wally.
Reed started the explanation. Agent Longshore has advised us about a Stasi operation to recruit an officer here inside the cabin as a double agent.
Who? Asked Frank and then paused. Vollreich?
Davis's face gave nothing away. Why do you say Vollreich?
Frank stopped.
I don't want to speak ill of a fellow officer, sir.
We're accusing people of treason, said Davis. The least we can do is speak freely.
In that case, sir, Frank swallowed.
I just have to say that I've never trusted Yannick Volreich, sir. He's... well, I've never really trusted him.
Because he's a Nazi, said Reed.
Former Nazi, said Frank.
Does that make it better?
Asked Davis and shot a glance at Reed.
I mean, it has to, sir, said Frank. That's the only way we work with them, right?
Because they've reformed.
Not every BND officer was a member of the Nazi Party, said Davis. Ostertag wasn't, or Lisa or Gisela. Wagner and Volreich both were, and some of the security guards and some of the people who hired them, but every one of them has made their current loyalties clear. Whether we like it or not, that's who the BND has given us to work with. But no, in this particular case, we don't think any of the former Nazis is the target.
Frank raised his eyebrow.
So the Stasi have standards, then?
Reed expected Davis to reprimand him, but instead, the chief smiled.
What did I tell you, Wally? He's a natural.
Reed frowned, not entirely comfortable with the plan. Frank glanced at him, then back at Davis.
Sir, Frank asked, who are they trying to turn?
The Stasi haven't decided yet, said Davis.
Longshore's given us so much advance warning on the SOP that we think we can turn it to our advantage.
You think? Frank looked back and forth between them. Reed could see in his face the exact instant that he figured out their plan.
You want me to become a double agent?
Triple, said Reed.
A CIA officer who pretends to feed secrets to the Stasi but is really just sowing misinformation to help the CIA.
Frank narrowed his eyes.
That sounds dangerous.
Very, said Davis.
Not at first, obviously. They're not going to introduce themselves as Stasi agents. They'll build up to that, if they ever admit it at all.
You'll need to be on the lookout for anyone new that you meet over the next few weeks. Maybe a new neighbor in your building, or someone on the train, or in a bar. Even a random hello in the hallway, or a smile across the street.
You can't possibly expect me to follow up on every person who smiles at me.
Davis raised his eyebrow.
Do a lot of people smile at you?
I mean, Frank frowned.
Well, no, not a huge number. Not that I've noticed, anyway.
Then yes, said Davis, I expect a full list. And I expect you to update that list every morning here in my office. And I expect you to maintain your normal habits to the greatest extent possible so that anybody who might be watching you will have no idea that you've just gained a brand new source of paranoia.
Frank cast a sidelong glance at Reed.
I'll do my best.
We haven't even gotten to the fun part, said Reed.
Through your careful observation, said Davis, and your complete lack of tells, we hope to identify who your new Stasi handler might be. Once we do, under my supervision, you will begin fostering that relationship. You will go along with any activities he or she suggests. You will visit people and places that he or she takes you to visit, and eventually, with extreme care, you will begin feeding that person's secrets. Many, if not most, of those secrets will be true. We're going to start with simple things, too innocuous to do any harm, but that the Stasi can confirm through other sources and thus use to verify your value as an informant. Once they trust you, we'll be able to feed them deliberate misinformation.
Okay, said Frank warily. Or I mean, it's... not okay, but it's an order, I guess, so yeah, but...
You say they haven't targeted anyone yet. He looked at Davis.
How are you going to make them pick me?
He paused, staring at Davis, and then narrowed his eyes.
Wait. You were talking about the Nazis.
Yes, said Reed.
Davis nodded. We believe that we can use the former Nazis in our office to give the Stasi the illusion of leverage against you. Frank laughed, though there was no humor in it.
Why does everyone keep using Nazis for everything?
We're going to make you the most appealing target in the office, said Davis. Nothing overboard, nothing too obvious. We'll make them believe you have cracks in your armor, cracks that they can exploit to finesse your patriotism in a subtle new direction.
But all of this has to be completely secret, said Reed. They have to believe that we know nothing about their operation. That's one of the reasons we're being so secretive, even inside of the cabin.
One of the reasons, said Frank. Davis nodded. The other reason is that we're going to use Vollreich against you. Frank was stunned into silence.
I'm very sorry, Frank, said Reed.
As of Sunday, said Davis, Yannick Vollreich will be promoted to section subchief. He will be your direct superior. He doesn't know anything about this operation or our plans for you, so the onus